Good evening. It is an absolute joy to be here. I don't know what made me more nervous, though, speaking to you guys or knowing that Tim was going to introduce me. And I told him this morning if he decided that he was going to tell some of those stories about when he was 16, 17 years old and we were at in the stock room of A&P, that I had the last word. He decided not to do that. I got to tell you, it is really intimidating for me to be here tonight. First off, what few lessons I've ever presented has been to a group, usually in smaller congregations of about 30 people. Normally, I would speak to a group of folks like over here. And now I got them all over the place. Anyway, it's a joy to be here. You folks have Jimmy Clark as a regular minister here who preaches up here all the time. You have people like Kyle Butts who come in here on a regular basis. Folks, these are the superstars of the Lord's church this day and time. The morning that Larry invited me to come speak tonight, which was gracious 6 months ago or so, I thought in my mind, well, there won't be anybody. You know, Jimmy will be gone. These other folks will be gone. It'll be okay. Brother Scott gets up here that morning and preaches a booming lesson on who sits on the throne of your heart. Do you remember that one? Awesome lesson. I thought, oh, great guns. You know, how intimidating. The preachers are gone, and here's a guy who fills in and just does a wonderful job. Now I learn that you've got two retired preachers who have had long, illustrious careers who are here tonight. I'm reminded of the story of an inexperienced preacher who got up one day at Fried Hardeman lectureships a few years ago, and he looked down and he was nervous to begin. He looked down and there says Brother Gus Nichols. He took a deep breath and said, Brother Nichols, would you like to preach this sermon? Brother Nichols, and I was like, go ahead, son. He goes, oh, me. And he looks up, okay, here's Brother Ira North over here. He goes, oh, my great. Brother North, would you like to preach? He goes, no, go ahead, son. Looks back over here, oh, great. Here's Brother Tom Holland sitting over here. Brother Holland, would you like to preach? No, you go ahead, son. He said, oh, me. He said, folks, you all heard me ask them if they wanted to preach. Now I'm going to have to tell them. If they expect me to preach, they got to leave. So, again, it is a wonderful opportunity, and I appreciate so much the invitation tonight. Faye and I look forward for any reason to be back into Limestone County and to be home and to be here with you folks. When Tim and Larry told me they was going to introduce me, I thought, well, that's a little embarrassing because I know most of you anyway, and most of you know me. If you didn't know me, you know my mama, and that probably sums it up. There was a preacher one time, a minister, who was going to teach the kids class. He had the small kids in a room, and he was going to teach a class to them, and he was using as an object lesson the common squirrel. Now, we know that the squirrels and the reason that we know them and we know how they behave, and his reasoning for this was he wanted to point out to these children how industrious the squirrels were and how they were always prepared. So this was a great object lesson that he was going to teach with the kids. So he tells the kids, okay, so I'm going to describe something, and when I get to the point where after I start describing it and you know what I'm talking about, I want you to raise your hand and tell me what I'm saying, what it is that I'm talking about. So they say, okay, good deal. So the kids are all excited. As you folks have worked with kids, you know, they're excited and ready to go. So the preacher says, okay, I'm going to describe something that lives in the trees. And he's looking around. Well, no hands go up. I eat nuts. Still no hands go up. So he looks and he says, okay. I'm gray. Still no hands. I have a bushy tail. Still no hands. Well, he's getting a little bit discouraged. He says, okay, I jump from branch to branch. No hands. And the kids are getting a little bit nervous. They're squirming around a little bit. And he said, and I chatter a lot. Well, for those of you who have taught the younger ones, you know little Johnny, he's always in there. Here goes Johnny's hand up. Little Johnny kind of eases his hand up, and the preacher said, oh, good, finally got somebody here. And little Johnny looks at him and says, okay, go ahead. He says, well, I know the answer you're looking for is Jesus, but it sounds like a squirrel to me. Now, in today's world, as we discussed a little bit this morning in Bible class, people have looked at the Bible, have studied it, and instead of seeing God, like Johnny was trying to force it into, what do they see? They see squirrels, don't they? Many of you are familiar with a fellow named Michael Shanks, wrote a book called Muscle and a Shovel a couple years ago, and Michael has taken that book and turned it into a Bible lesson for a 12-week quarterly study. And through one of the publishers or something, we learned that on his website, he had like the first three lessons of this thing up for you to look at and review. So I was doing that. I couldn't remember his website, so I Googled it up and found it and went right to it, found what I was looking for, hit the print button, and got those first three chapters because I wanted to look at it. We were considering doing it at Evans, maybe either this quarter or in January. But while it was printing, unfortunately, those of you, I'm probably not alone in this, but when I Google something and there's always other links up there, I end up losing time because I go read them. Well, in this particular case, I ended up finding a link to for a blog, basically. And this gentleman that was writing this who claimed to be a mature man with kids and grandkids, who claimed to be a preacher and also an elder in the Church of Christ. And his response was, if you have read Muscle and Shovel, his response to that was that Michael Shanks is biased, he is judgmental, and those in the Church of Christ who believe what he says in the book are outdated. He goes on to say then that if we are good moral people, and if we invite Jesus into our heart as our personal Savior, then it really doesn't matter what else we believe, where we go, anything else we do, because we're going to be saved. Now, I got to tell you, folks, he has obviously looked at a different Bible than what mine says and what yours says, I suspect. He has looked in there, and instead of seeing God, he's seen a squirrel, hasn't he? I'd like to use another example. One that's fairly close to us. I was giving a friend of mine a little bit of a hard time when I was telling that story earlier today. That gentleman that claims to be an elder and a preacher is involved in a large congregation in a large city of our state where there is a large institution of learning that impacts the minds of our young people. And that is not uncommon, I don't think. Other example. Book of Ezekiel. Let me ask you to do me a favor. I've got a few more things I wanted to say before we get into this, but be turning to the book of Ezekiel. We're not going to read an awful lot of that, but we'll look at some of it in just a few minutes. The book of Ezekiel, a lot of folks tend not to want to, or will read a little bit of it and then say, I don't want to do this because it's apocryphal literature, it's very figurative language, and has a lot of symbols and stuff in it. And we tend not to, and that's a little bit more difficult. So we tend not to want to look at that too much. But before we can start talking about the book of Ezekiel, we really have to kind of look at a little bit of the history that leads up to who Ezekiel is. You say, oh, well, he's one of those guys over there after Psalms and somewhere in there. He's a prophet. So let's look a little bit of history. And I'll tell you that I'm going to cover, let's see, nearly 30% of the Old Testament in about 5 minutes. The books of 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles. We're going to do that as kind of a review of history that gets us where Ezekiel is located. Now, as Jimmy mentioned this morning, the Jews, at one point in time, are the children of Israel. They came through Samuel. They came to us and said, we want a king. Now, you remember why they wanted a king? Because everybody else had one, right? That's when I wanted Jimmy to stop this morning because he was already fixing to start talking about what I was going to talk about. But they came and said, we want a king. Okay. God said, back through Samuel, okay, you're going to have a king. He gave him first King Saul, didn't he? After Saul, who didn't do what God told him to, had King David. After David's reign, then came David's son Solomon. Now, Solomon is noted for being a very wise man. But you know, even in that, one of the things that really is a shame, and I don't know how else to say it, it's tragic. Solomon not only loved God initially and was concerned about that, but he really did love all the women that he had in his household. Even to the point of what, 700 wives, 300 concubines, 1,000 women that he was involved with. And most of them, if not all of them, came from the pagan world around him. So as his life, as he grew older, he became much less committed to God's statutes and protocols or worship services and this kind of thing. He left God and turned to the pagans because of these women. We got a transparency. We got a slide that might come up here in a minute. Okay, we can go on about that. Anyway, as Solomon went forward with his life, there we go. Well, we almost had it, didn't we? As Solomon got older, he turned away from God. God said, because of your apostasy, Solomon, I'm going to tear this kingdom away from you. Can we go to the slideshow? Excellent. Now go back about two and we'll be in business. Oh, I got the... Oh. All right, here we go. Thank you. God said, I'm going to tear this kingdom away from you because of your apostasy. He said, but I'm not going to completely take it away from you because of my servant David. Solomon's father, David, he said, I'm not going to completely take the kingdom away from you. So basically, that's where we see in the history, the northern kingdom of Israel was basically formed. Jeroboam led 10 of the tribes away from the nation that had formerly been Israel to the north and became the northern kingdom of Israel. And with that, Solomon was left with what's now called the southern kingdom or Judah, a much smaller group of people, and so forth. Now, as this went on, as time went on, we see that the Assyrian Empire is beginning to grow. While the Assyrian Empire is growing, back over here with the northern and southern kingdom, the southern kingdom for about the first 100 years kept trying to reunite the two together with warring with the kings and so forth of the northern kingdom, finally give that up, and they finally found a way to peacefully coexist through some arranged marriages and so forth. Now, the Assyrian kingdom now, or the Assyrian Empire, has got large. At the same time, the northern kingdom, as you read through all the really evil kings it had, has led that group of people completely away from God. God says, okay, I'm going to show my judgment to you. Brings the Assyrian Empire, the Assyrian army in, and wipes out the northern kingdom of Israel. So basically, that's the last we basically hear of them. They are basically assimilated into all the other territory of the Assyrian Empire. And this goes on for a while. Now then, as the Assyrian Empire, as you study history, you know, one kingdom will rise and it'll peak and then it'll fall, another one will come on. Now we have the Babylonian Empire coming along, and they're gaining strength, the Assyrians are losing strength. The Babylonians now then fight a decisive battle with the Assyrians in the city of Nineveh, and now we've got the Babylonian folks who are pretty much the empire that's pretty much the major dominating force in the region. Now, we've still got our southern kingdom of Judah down here, and of course their kings have not all been true to God, so they've kind of ventured off into apostasy away from God. So God says, okay, and he says, I'm going to put a punishment on these folks also. And they found themselves kind of in rebellion against the Babylonian Empire. So if you can think about this kingdom of Judah down here in this bottom corner, right next to the Philistine area there in red, had a really small kingdom now, and they're rebelling against a major power like the Babylonians. Well, the Babylonian king decides to send what we would call an expeditionary force, so to speak, down into the kingdom of Judah, quiets the rebellion, and takes a bunch of captives back to Babylon. Now, in this particular situation, you can see the map here. We've got Jerusalem and the southern kingdom over here next to the Mediterranean Sea. Babylon is up in this area to the right over here. And there is a group of captives that are carried back. Yeah. Now think back. Here's the first quiz question tonight. Other than Ezekiel, who happened to be one of those captives, what other four captives got carried back in that? Got carried back to Babylon. Well, three of them's name I have a hard time saying. They were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? Who was with them? Daniel. All right. You know, in this particular event, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Ezekiel were all carried back to Babylon. Now, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was, as you remember the story, were pretty well-educated young men who served at the royal court. So, if you look at this map, let's see, not going to work. I thought I was going to slip in and use the pointer. Anyway, the city of Babylon, and over to the right of that is another city called Susa, S-U-S-A. Now, Susa was the summer palace of the Babylonian king. So, between Susa and Babylon, you had Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And those young men were being examples of what it took to serve the true God. And we have Ezekiel, just about, not quite 100 miles south of Babylon, in an area called Tel Abib. So, in general, God's got three prophets in place now, to warn the people of what he's going to do if they don't change their ways. We got what's left of the kingdom of Judah who are still in apostasy. We got those in our exile in Babylon. Okay, he's got Jeremiah, as we study there. Jeremiah is still back in Jerusalem. Now, the key to this whole thing is the city of Jerusalem and what's inside the city of Jerusalem that's so important. The temple. So those are the two things that, even though the Jews tend, or the children of Israel tend to wander off and forget who they're supposed to be worshiping, that's still important to them. The city of Jerusalem, because it's their holy city, so to speak, and the temple, because that's where God lives, and they still hold on to that. So you've got Jeremiah over there, you've got Ezekiel now in Tel Aviv, and you've got Daniel and his friends in these other particular cities. Yeah, so you can see down around what's called Tel Aviv, and we'll look at the first few verses of Ezekiel in just a moment. But that he talks about the river Kibar as we start reading here. Now the river Kibar is no more than an irrigation canal that was dug south of Babylon, down into to the region of Tel Aviv, and bringing the waters out of the Euphrates River into that part of the country down there. So it was those of us who have some interested in engineering and some things like that, that particular canal would have been extremely interesting just to see how it was dug and how they knew where to get it to. Okay, let's look now, if we would, at the first three verses of chapter 1 of Ezekiel. And it says, "Now it came to pass in the 13th year, in the fourth month, and the fifth day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river Kibar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of King Jehoiachin's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar, and the hand of the Lord was on him there." Now, for those of you that's ever taken maybe a journalism class or a writing class, we remember that one of the, things the instructors always ask, who, when you're going to write, who, what, where, when, and how, or something like that. Well, in those first three verses, and now, we know Ezekiel identifies himself as a priest, doesn't he? He is a priest. He is of the priestly tribe. He identifies the time frame. He's very specific about the time frame, not only the month and the day of the year, but so many years into such and such as reign. He identifies, and his whole book is very clear on time frames, which makes it that much more historically accurate. But he talks about who he is, where he is. He says he talks about being in Chaldea, that's Babylon. He talks about being by the river Kibar, which, as we talked about, is there, and that's located about 80 to 85 miles south of Babylon. So he has really talked about a great deal of stuff here in terms of where he is, who he is, and identify. Now, do you see, this is a trick question, do you see really anything confusing about those first three verses? They're straightforward. He tells us who he is, what's happened. He sees a vision of God, from God, doesn't he? Now, how does he know it's a vision from God? Well, we know he knew because that's what the Bible tells us, isn't it? Now, as we remember, one of the things we're wanting to look at is people who will look at something in the Bible and see something completely opposite of what we're talking about. Okay, now in verse 4 of chapter 1 is where Ezekiel gets into his vision. And in verse 4 he says, and I'm going to paraphrase some here, so don't quote, I'm not trying to quote it. I don't quote as well as some of these other folks do, some of the other men do. But he says, I looked and behold, I saw a whirlwind. Now, I got to tell you, you folks in this community right here have a pretty good idea of what a big whirlwind looks like, don't you? If we don't know what it looks like, we certainly know what it looks like after it goes by. So, anyway, a big whirlwind. Maybe it was like a tornado. But, you know, and I can, as I read, I thought, well, maybe it was just like you just take a section out of a tornado and look at it. You know, maybe this is the middle section of one. Who knows what it was. But he saw a whirlwind coming from out of the north. Again, figurative apocalyptic language, the north meaning and indicating coming from God. Okay, so he sees it. Now, he's got this big whirlwind coming at him. And it's got a big cloud in it. Well, that's not unusual. We know that a tornado has a cloud in it, doesn't it? And it's dark and all that. But in the middle of the cloud, what was there? A raging fire. So now think about what that must look like just by itself. You've got a section maybe of a huge tornado that's got this dark cloud in it that's making all kinds of racket. And now you got a fire right in the middle of it. And it's not just a little flame. It's a raging, consuming fire. Now, when he looks at that, that'd be enough to make me want to back off just to start with to see something like that. And then he says he sees this. In the midst of the fire were four creatures the color of amber. Each was in the likeness of a man. Each had four faces of a man. Each had four faces. One face a man, one face a lion, one face an eagle, and one of an ox. Okay, we got, you know, try to imagine, as you read through this, we talk a little bit, try to imagine what this thing must have looked, these things must have looked like. We've got something that looks kind of like a man. He's got four heads, and each one of them are different. Ox, lion, eagle, man. Think of what that looks like. These creatures have four wings, two up here, two down this way. And it goes on to say that they have, under the wings, they have arms of a man. They have legs like a man and feet like cattle. Well, that has got to be an unusual looking character, hasn't it? That has got to be an unusual looking character. Creature. Now, not only is it as we would say today, kind of weird looking, or as our kids say, that's kind of weird looking. But this thing, all of a sudden, there's lights flashing around, something like lightning flashing back and forth between the wings of these creatures and between the creatures. And when they move, they don't turn. They move in straight lines. Now, can you visualize that? Like this. They don't take a shortcut and do a 45-degree turn. They move in straight lines. So now then, just a strange situation that looks like this. Then, beside these creatures, he sees wheels. And here's a picture of what this might have looked like. Who knows? But he sees these wheels, and it's described as a wheel within a wheel. And on the rims of this wheel within a wheel, there are eyes. So now, here's Ezekiel. Here's these four characters here. Here's the wheel within a wheel. And now then, he says that he sees above the creatures, and this is another person's idea of what this might have looked like. He sees above the wheels that were within a wheel, above the creatures, he sees a firmament. And you see there's represented some clouds and this kind of stuff. Still, all the fire, all the noise, all the lightning, and he sees, and then above the firmament, he sees something like the likeness of a man. Now, in many cases, you'll read, as you read people's discussion about Ezekiel, you'll find that this is sometimes called God's chariot or his war chariot and this kind of thing. But you get the idea, this may be what it looked like. Now, the reality is, folks, in your own mind, if you can picture what this looked like, it really doesn't matter whether it agrees with the rest of us or not, does it? Because we don't know what that was. But we know it pretty much was described. Now, we talked about somebody, and let me go back here just a minute before I talk about this gentleman. In the last verse of chapter 1, Ezekiel takes the mystery out of it because he says, this was a likeness of the glory of God. He knew what it was. No mystery. It was a likeness of the glory of God. And if you go into the first verse of chapter 2, Ezekiel responded in an appropriate manner. And what did he do? Boom. Right down on the ground, face down. He knew he was in the presence of God. So, again, nothing really hard here to figure out. A big roaring vision that he saw, but he knew who it was. And he said not only did he fall down face down at this vision, but he also was spoken to by the One, O-N-E. And you'll notice in most of the translations, you'll find the One is capitalized, meaning God. So Ezekiel knew what he was seeing. He didn't need any help defining what it was. He knew he was looking at God. Now, here's the interesting part, and we'll kind of start wrapping this up a little bit. If we don't think, just like, and Jimmy mentioned this morning, if you don't think that people will disagree with you about the Bible, get on a blog, get on an internet, get on a chat room and tell people who you are and what you believe in. And they will tell you real fast how wrong we are. Now, and it's not, we wouldn't think about it being in our country. Well, I already given you one example tonight. We got it right here in the state of Alabama. And now then, this gentleman named Joseph Bloomridge, who worked for the Marshall Space Flight Center, which is, what, 20 miles from us? Some of you folks have worked there in over your careers. I know that Faye worked with NASA at the Marshall Space Flight Center when she was a very young girl. And she worked there when we were over here a few years ago when we semi-tried to retire. So anyway, we're all familiar with the Marshall Space Flight Center. Now, Mr. Bloomridge was served in the German Army during World War II as an infantry. You got to get it right in a minute. Infantryman. Now, he was working for, before the war started, he worked for a company called Messerschmitt. Some of you who remember a little bit of history of the war know that Messerschmitt was an aircraft company in Germany. So he had that experience. He picked up his arms and he went and fought for his country. After the war, he did some other things. And eventually, he came to this country and was employed by the Marshall Space Flight Center. Now, any of you ever watch, because you're probably getting a good idea of where I'm going to go here in a minute. Any of you watch a History Channel on TV and something called Ancient Aliens? The Ancient Aliens TV show deals with the fact that hundreds and thousands of years ago, who visited the planet? Earth. Aliens. They really believe this. Well, Bloomrich did too. He really believed it. As a matter of fact, when he read the first chapter of Ezekiel, instead of seeing a vision of God, he's convinced that what Ezekiel really saw was the landing of an alien spaceship that looked something like maybe this thing here. Now, that's not a very good picture there. And actually, he published a book himself called Ezekiel's Spaceship. He was in line with one of the other German writers that published one that you may be familiar with called The Chariots of the Gods. This is a big thing, and this is what he thinks that Ezekiel saw. He saw the landing of a spacecraft. Now, in this particular spacecraft, if you look at this, the four wheels down here at the bottom were the wheels within the wheel that Ezekiel saw, that they were actually part of a retractable landing gear. The wings that he saw were actually rotors that were part of a helicopter-like propulsion system for this spacecraft when it was in around close to the ground and so forth. And that was the reason it didn't turn, it didn't go at angles, it went in straight directions. The arms like a man were the manipulator arms that was alongside the thing, and the feet like the cattle, or those landing pods there that made it. Now, this guy saw all of that out of the same thing that we just looked at a minute ago. Out of the same vision, he saw all of that. So he's convinced that was the case. As we look more into the vision, remember, fire, smoke, very loud noise. Any of you ever have an opportunity to be anywhere around Cape Kennedy when the shuttle fleet was flying? Any of you ever see a launch of the shuttle? I see one or two hands. Okay. A lot of smoke. A lot of fire, a lot of noise. According to Joseph here, that was the noise and the exhaust from a very powerful propulsion system. Okay, now, this gentleman has looked at the first chapter of Ezekiel, where we as Christians want to look at this and say, okay, here's what it says. This is a vision of the likeness of the glory of God. Ezekiel tells us that. But Mr. Bloomrich, he decides it's a spacecraft. And he puts it all together and makes it look like this. The firmament that he saw, if we go back here a little bit, remember the firmament that he saw in his vision? That now becomes the fuselage of this spacecraft that he thinks Ezekiel saw. And guess what the likeness of the man sitting on the throne is? There's the cockpit and the passenger. So this guy has looked at the same things we look at and developed a whole scenario, so to speak, of what Ezekiel really saw. 2 Timothy 2:15. Study to show thyself approved unto God. Study to show thyself approved unto God. A workman that needeth not be ashamed, and you guys know the rest of it by heart, don't we? Rightly dividing the word. Rightly dividing the word. I challenge all of us tonight for this. To this. As we study the Bible, as we talk to other people, let us do this. Let us for sure study to show ourselves approved to God. When we divide or when we interpret, that's what I think that means, interpreting the Word as God has seen fit, when we interpret it that matches what He's told us, then when we look at that and we talk to other people, we come to those conclusions and we share that conclusion that that in fact is the Word of God. If we in fact believe that the Bible is the inspired Word of God, that it was good for the people when it was written, it's good for those folks 1,000 years ago, and it's good for us today. It does not change. As the gentleman mentioned earlier, we are not outdated. We are followers of that book. So when we rightly divide the Word, when we look at any reference, anything that talks about God, implies God, let's see God. But you know what? If it's gray and has a bushy tail, it's probably a squirrel. If and tonight you have studied the book, you have come to the conclusion that sure enough, I've got to repent of my sins, I've got to confess Christ as the Savior, the Son of God, and I've got to be baptized, and you haven't done that yet, we want to offer that opportunity. I want to share with you just very briefly one of the most joyful moments I had just within the last few weeks. It was a couple of weeks ago, it'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow night. The other gentleman that serves as an elder in our congregation and I were studying with a couple, a married couple who the wife has been a Christian for a long time. Her husband was raised in one of the denominational churches and was baptized in that church. Now, his baptism was for a lot of reasons, dealing with tradition and some other things and customs, and not necessarily for remission of sins. And we were studying with him concerning that. Because he was concerned with it, and so we had a session, and we were studying. At the end of the after about an hour and a half, the question was asked of Kevin. Kevin, how do you feel about baptism, and what's your situation? He said, "You know, I need to be baptized." And Arthur looks at him, and he says, "Well, when you want to do that?" Kevin looked over at me, looked back at Arthur, he said, "I want to do it right now." One of the most joyous times. You talk about making your heart do a backflip. It does that. So if you're in that situation tonight, if you've come to that realization, and you haven't done it yet, we stand ready to help you with that. If you've been away, if you've been a Christian most of your life and in somewhere have fallen short, have drifted away, I can tell you it is so easy to do. We all know that. It's a battle against the world every day. If you're in that situation where you need to confess that and ask for the prayers of this family that meet here, they would absolutely love to help you with that. If there's any way we can help you in either of those two situations, please come forward and let us know while we stand and sing.